title of this message today is Right-Minded Prayer. We're going to kind of do a couple of studies through these verses we're looking at because there's so much in them. And particularly, we're going to be looking at Philippians 4, verses 5 through 7 today. But before we get started with that, we're going to be looking at something that everyone in this room is guilty of. Can anybody tell me what that is?
Sin.
We're all guilty of sin. They're great students, boy.
Worry.
Worry. Worry. You know, I've read many commentaries that say that worry is a sin. And I'm not too certain about that. I have to do a little bit more study on that before I actually will make that claim. But I do know what is a sin. If anyone can with complete honesty say that you never worry, there's forgiveness for you at the foot of the cross. For the sin of lying is a sin. We all have worried. Many of us have got PhDs in worry. We'll be looking at some interesting quotes today that I have. They really have to do with anxiety or worry or fear and all that is connected to being anxious, and Paul talks about. So let's look at verse 5 first of chapter 4. He says, "Let your gentleness be known to all men. The Lord is at hand." Keep that at the forefront of your mind. The Lord is at hand. Okay.
I'm lost. Where are we?
Philippians 4.
Moderation.
Moderation? What it says, let your moderation. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have a hard time hearing Al sometimes.
Okay.
I'm half deaf.
We need to sit you up front then. Right here. Right in front of the teacher.
I guess. I really do.
He says, let your gentleness or your moderation be known to all men. Remember what he's talking to the people of Philippi. And he just got through addressing in the earlier verses the two ladies that aren't getting along. And he's saying, let your gentleness be known to all men. The Lord is at hand. Verse 6, be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Regarding worry, Charlie Brown once said to Linus, I worry about school a lot. He thought a little longer, and then he said, I worry about worrying so much about school. He reflected some more, and then he concluded, even my anxieties have anxieties. Charlie Brown worries. Someone said, worry is wasting today's time to clutter up tomorrow's opportunities with yesterday's troubles. I'll read it again. Worry is wasting today's time to clutter up tomorrow's opportunities with yesterday's troubles. George Mueller would write, the beginning of anxiety is the end of faith, and the beginning of true faith is the end of anxiety. Many of you who don't know who George Mueller is, he ran an orphanage in the early, I think the late 1800s, early 1900s. And he wrote a book, and he talks a lot about some of the things that happened when he was running the orphanage. He didn't want to do it, but God put it on his heart to do it. And he remembers one day that though in the orphanage, they had no food for the kids. And so he commenced to praying that God would provide food for them. And very miraculously, some food showed up. I don't remember the whole gist of it, but something happened at one of the grocery stores where they had to get rid of the food they had because it wasn't going to last. And they said, hey, that guy's got an orphanage over there. Take it over there. So they took it over there. And it was those kind of things that he put his, he didn't fear about. Yeah, miracle after miracle. And he prayed and God provided for them. Here's a question, a little limerick, or I should say a little ditty. What lies at the bottom of the ocean and twitches? What lies at the bottom of the ocean and twitches? A nervous wreck. A nervous wreck. A boat that is sunk and it just sits there and it just moves, right? Another writer says, anxiety is a thin stream of fear trickling through the mind. If encouraged, it cuts a channel into which all other thoughts are drained. Pretty interesting. When you think about that, how the Grand Canyon was made through a river that just began flowing and flowing and flowing until it got deeper and deeper and deeper.
Can you repeat that again?
Yes, anxiety is a thin stream of fear trickling through the mind. If encouraged, it cuts a channel into which all others' thoughts are drained. Everything that we think will flow through that fear that we go through. So a good question for us today is, why do we worry if we know that God is in total control of everything? Why do we worry? I'm going to write some of those down, some of your answers. Why do we worry? Yeah.
Well, you worry about something.
Okay.
You know, how they're doing. That's what, I'll be honest, that's what I worry about.
Yeah.
Are you asking us what we're worrying about or why?
Why do we worry? If we know God's in control of everything, why do we worry about that? There's two senses of worrying or anxiety that the Bible talks about in here. One is worry in as far as caring. I care for that person, and so I'm going to pray for them. It's not like, oh, I hope they're okay. It's a different kind. It's caring. But the one Paul's talking about today is don't be anxious. Don't allow this thing to control you in the negative sense. But why do we worry? I said, if God's in control, if he knows everything, why do we worry?
I would think we still think he's not going to pull through.
Okay.
There's that fear that he's not going to do what we... Because really, if you think about it, he can do whatever he wants to, and it may not be our way, and so...
Yeah.
So, can scare you.
So we are afraid that God won't answer it the way we want it to be answered. Could be one way to look at it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, good. Anything else? Fear, the word fear came up. That's good.
And isn't it a way of the devil getting to us?
Okay. Doubt.
Doubt.
Doubt can creep in. What if God doesn't, right? What if? Yeah. We play the what if game, right?
Yeah.
I remember sharing that with the kids when I was teaching DARE. And they would ask me questions, what if? And I would always answer, what if it does? Well, what if it doesn't? And I said, well, what if it does? So either one of those are just a worry that probably is never going to happen. You know, like one little kid, I remember saying, well, what if somebody came up to me and put a gun to my head and made me take drugs? I said, well, what if he doesn't?
I love it.
I'm still thinking of your question. I would also say a lack of realizing who God is.
Lack of gnosko.
Because if we truly know God, we should never have a worry.
Exactly.
That is true.
If we truly know he's in control, and that was the question, why do we worry? But we worry, right?
Yep.
We do worry.
It's human nature.
Okay, so we'll look at that. We'll look at human nature.
We're frail and flawed.
Speaking of that, think about by the time we get done, you think about somebody who says, that's just me, I'm a worrier. Okay, keep that in mind. I'm a worrier. Anybody who says that, it's not a good thing. Especially a Christian, because what you're saying is,
you don't believe.
I don't believe God's going to take care of this. I'm just a worrier, right?
Well, 9 times out of 10, what you worry about doesn't happen.
There you go. Okay, I'll go over that. I'm just a worrier. Some people boast in being a worrier, believe it or not. I'm a worrier, and I'll worry for you too. Well, don't worry for me. Pray for me, right?
Well, I worry we're going to have too much snow this week.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
What are you going to do about it?
I had something and it's kind of gone.
Well, for one of the reasons we do is because unknowingly we don't trust God for the outcome. Now, we won't say that, but we will feel fear comes in. But what if God doesn't take care of me? I'm sure every one of us in here has had an occasion in our lifetime, in our span, where money was so tight, you wondered, how are we going to pay the bills? Mm-hmm. Everybody been like that?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. We tell the story all the time when we planted the church in California. We actually, after paying all of our bills, we actually had $5 left for the month. $5. And so rather than sitting around and complaining and doing all that, we went to Quiznos and bought a $5 sandwich.
They were the big.
The great big ones. And we cut it in half.
And drank water.
And drank water. And that was our date because we had $5 to spend. But never, ever, never did we ever go hungry. Never were we without shelter. Never were we without heat or cool. God provided for all of that. I share story upon story about people that would come up and say, hey, God just placed on my heart to give you this. And the guy reached out with a handshake, and I went to shake his hand, and in it was five $100 bills. Who does that? See, and I mean, you just fall apart. Yeah. Or the time that our landlord, when I think I broke it, but it went out, disposal went out. And I hated calling our landlord. I hated being a renter at that time. But I hated calling the landlord because I thought it was a burden, but I'd call him and he'd come out. He'd say, you know what, Al, I happen to have another one in my garage. I saw it a couple of months ago and thought, you know, I might need to pick that up for the house one day. And so he just bought it. And he came out and he replaced it. And while he replaced it, he said, you know, you and Linda are really, this was their retirement home. You and Linda have really just been such good renters. I'm going to lower your rent $50 a month.
200.
Well, that was 50 then. Oh. And then we're like, not only did he have to fix the disposal, but he lowered our rent. And then about a year later, the air conditioning went out. Now, how do you call the landlord for that? You're like, oh, man. Gary, I really hate to say this. It was 104 degrees the day I called him. He was so concerned. He goes, don't worry, Al, I'll have somebody out there tomorrow. They came out there and they replaced, I think it was a condenser or something on it. And then he came out to talk to me. His wife was out of town. He says, hey, I want to talk to you. You and Linda have been such good renters. We're going to lower your rent another $100. And I'm like, who does that? Your landlord. And then at Christmas time, I'm going to be very brief on this. We were sitting there and going through the bills, and we realized that there was no money for Christmas. And we didn't say anything to anybody. Had people over all the time. You, pastor and his wife, you people are always in your house, and you provide for them. And the landlord comes over, and Linda had a big wall where she put all of the Christmas cards on. And he came over, him and his wife, and they gave us a card and a tin of cookies. And I thought, oh, this is awesome. We got some chocolate chip cookies. And when they left, Linda opened the card to hang it up, and five $100 bills fell out of the card.
Aww. From our landlord.
From our landlord.
He didn't come to our church.
It was exactly what we were short for Christmas.
Aww.
That nobody knew about, but God. God knew. So those kinds of things. So when we worry, a lot of times it's because we don't trust God for the outcome.
I'd say another reason is because of the law of nature. When you know, or history of things, this always happens.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so what you've always been used to.
Yeah, well, if it rains too much, it's going to flood.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the reality of it.
Yeah.
So trusting in the law of land or nature and over God, I don't know.
Speaking of that, you know, it's funny how the world, for the most part, wants something to do with God. Businesses really don't want anything to do with God. But funny how insurance is when a travesty like what's happening in the East right now, when all that flooding happens, the insurance companies call it what?
An act of God. And they don't cover it.
God gets blamed for it and it doesn't get covered, right? Yeah. But yet, even in that, God is still present in that storm. That's what we have to look at for them, but for you and I. A lot of times we worry because we don't have any control over what's happening. And the worry takes point of how can I control this? I'll worry about it.
That's a really good one.
Think about that for a moment.
That is a super good one.
On your sheet for your homework next week, I encourage you to take a piece of paper out and write those three questions. What did I worry about this week?
You have it on the back of the
page. Yes, it's on your page. What did I worry about this week? This convicted me because I'm like, how am I going to get this roof done?
Yeah.
I can't physically get up there like I'm supposed to. I tried yesterday. So I figure, well, I need to pray. God, you got me started on this thing through my wife. It's her fault. I mean, just like Adam, that woman you gave me, put me up on this roof. But I need your help. Matter of fact, I prayed that Saturday when Friday I was hurting so bad. I mean, I was sitting here, iced my knees every hour on the hour because they were huge. I thought about calling my neighbors and saying, hey, I'll text you in the morning if I'm able to do the work. And I thought, you know, I need to trust the Lord on this. So I just started praying, Lord, I can't do this unless you bring these knees down and you give me the strength to finish that tomorrow. And don't you know, they came, I got up, my knees were down. We went through the whole day and God accomplished what it is we needed to get accomplished. Yep. I could have sat there and just worried about it and it just been a wreck, but the Lord told me, you need to pray about this. Number two, how much time did I spend worrying? 30 minutes, an hour, all day, all week? And then the third thing is, what did my worrying accomplish?
Nothing.
You can answer that today, can't you?
That's right. Nothing.
Just a stomach ache.
Yeah. This falls in line with what Roy mentioned earlier. Some years ago, a professor at a leading American university studied the things that people worry about. And it's interesting what his research discovered. It discovered that 40% of the things they worry about never happens. 30% concerns the past. 12% are needless worries about health. 10% are about petty issues. And 8% are legitimate concerns. 8% out of 100 are legitimate concerns. And so he goes on and says, that means 92% of our worry time is wasted energy. But Paul is saying that we're not even to worry about 8%. Why is that? Well, due in part because when we worry, we're really saying that God can't take care of us. And our problems are bigger than his promises. God gave us the promise, I will never leave you or forsake you, right?
Right.
One guy writes, or he once said, worry is practical atheism and an affront to God. Worry is practical atheism and an affront to God. When we worry about things that we shouldn't, that we have no control over, and think about that for a moment. We don't have any control over it. And because we don't have any control over it, we think all we can do is worry now. I'll worry about it. How's that going to get done? I remember at times, during those times when, you know, Lynn and I were going through that with the church over there, it was like, she goes, well, how are we going to do this? And I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. Well, doesn't it bother you? I said, sure it does. But me worrying isn't going to make it any better. I just can't worry about that. You know, if she didn't know that I trusted God, she would say, well, you just don't care. But she knew. She had to think, man, this guy is just, he's not worried about it. She didn't see when I went outside and looked up into the stars and said, God,
why,
you got to do something. This woman you gave, she's worried.
Yeah, because you got a little worried.
I didn't know what was going to happen. But you know, even with that worry sometimes, because we don't know what's going on, we ended up having to, I got a job, and I shared that story, and it was this time of the year, which oftentimes I feel I need counseling during this time of year, because I had to take a job at a cotton gin for $8 an hour, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I thought, how am I going to do this? It was so bad. It was the first paycheck that I got after 1 week's worth of work. I cried because I thought, how am I going to do this? My own mother-in-law told Linda, you need to make him quit, you know? He gets up at 4:30 in the morning to ice his knees just to go to work. But I had to do the part that God was calling me to do to see it through. And the response of all of that, not only just mine, but Linda's, wholeheartedly was God, was he planted the church. We had no idea what he was doing. We didn't know. Planted the church that's still going on to this day, as a matter of fact. And as we look at our verses today, we know that if anybody had an excuse for worrying, it was the Apostle Paul. His beloved Christian friends in Philippi were disagreeing with one another, and he wasn't there to help them. And we have no idea what these two gals that we talked about a couple weeks ago were disputing about, but whatever it was bringing a division to the church. And that stuff can get out of hand if it's not taken care of. And along with the potential division at Philippi, remember, Paul also had to face the division among the believers in Rome. Remember, he said, some of them are preaching the gospel for a different thing, but what's happening to me is actually turned out much better for the gospel. So don't worry about that, you know. They themselves were going through the same thing. But added to these burdens was the possibility of his own death. Remember that? He had no idea whether he was going to die. But Paul would have an excuse to worry, but he didn't. And some say, well, that's because he's the Apostle Paul. He's a super saint. You realize that the Apostle Paul is no different than you and I?
No.
He's not. He wasn't. He was no different. He saw, he came to the light that blinded him, he knew was God. And he came to that light. So what does he do? Instead, he takes the time to explain to us the secret of victory over worry. We have the answer. We have the antidote. You're going to hear me say that a couple of times. To worry. I want you to keep this in mind. He's writing about the state of what's going on in that fellowship at the time. False teachers are abounding. People are quarreling with each other. And he says in verse 5, let your gentleness be known to all men. Why? Because the Lord is at hand. It's when we realize that the Lord is at hand that we can look at something other than our problem. But Lord, you're here. I know you're here.
It's like that's the key.
Exactly. Remembering that God is at hand. I'll say that in a little bit. Well, I had it written down a little bit later. By the way, this is a great exhortation for you and I about not worrying. We have a massive election, probably the biggest election in all of our lifetimes, mm-hmm. in 33 days. What if I told you, and people are like, oh, what if he doesn't win? Oh, what if I told you that God already knows the answer right now?
He does.
God knows everything.
He does.
He knows everything.
He knows the outcome of that.
He's just not saying.
So, no. Yeah. Where are we going to put our faith?
In God.
In him. We still have to do our part, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
I said that earlier about in order when God says, I said, what do you want me to do? I had to go to the cotton gin. I didn't want to do that. But I did it because he provided it for me.
So if the election goes array.
If it goes array.
The Lord is
He's at hand. He already knows.
One person told me, well, we survived 8 years of Obama.
There you go. So what do we do if that doesn't turn out? You just turn off your TV. You're not going to hear it.
Right.
You're not going to see it. It's when we look at it and go, well, yeah, but what are they saying? I want to be informed, but don't get deformed. I just made that up.
Yeah.
Don't get deformed in your thinking like, oh, this they're making me think this way. They can't do that. Only we allow that.
Our own brains let us do it.
Yeah. When it says the Lord is at hand, I take it as he's coming back.
Exactly. Well, not only that. Think about it. I'm glad you pointed that out, Linda. The Lord is at hand. He's saying he's coming again, and he's still here. He's at hand. He's amongst us. Is the Holy Spirit in us? Mm-hmm. The Lord is at hand. He's here. It's what we do with him when he gives us these things. He's saying, I'm going to allow this in your life. And it isn't to, some of it could be to test us, but he already knows whether we're going to pass it or not. But a lot of it, he wants us to know. See, I really, truly am in the Lord. Because before I would have worried about that. Yeah. And I'm not going to worry about it. You know, I can only do what I can do. I remember hearing, and I forgot to write it down, but there's a story about this clock that almost lost its life because it realized it did so many ticks per minute. And he started adding up how many ticks that was in an hour, then how many ticks that was in a week, then how many ticks that was in a month, then how many ticks that was in a year, and it overwhelmed him that he just shut down. The clock shut down. And the owner of the clock took him to the clock doctor. And the clock doctor says, what's ailing you? I realize in a year's time, that's over 62,800,000 plus whatever ticks. He says, well, let me ask you this one question. How many ticks do you have in a second? He said, one. That's what you focus on. Just one. One tick at a time. That's all you do.
One day at a time.
Yeah, one day at a time. Well, because even Jesus, I'm going to talk about that a little bit. What did Jesus say? Why do you worry about tomorrow? I love that because he's actually asking them. It's not a rhetorical question. Why do you worry about that? Because you're worrying. And when Paul says, be anxious, verse 6, for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And we're going to be camping out on this for a couple of studies because I want it to sink into our cranias or cranials, whatever you pronounce it. We need to get it deep in our head. And when we do, I guarantee you, we're going to be some of the strongest disciples come November 5th. People are going to freak out. But we'll be standing strong going, you know what? It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. But Paul's telling the believers in Philippi, and to you and I as well, to not become anxious or to worry about our circumstances. See, the old English root word for this, for the word worry, means, watch this, to strangle. And if you ever have really worried, you know how it does strangle a person. If you know somebody that is just, they are just a worry wart. We even give it another word, right? I mean, warts are bad enough, but now you're a worry wart? It's like, what if every time you worried, you got a wart? And you could see it on someone. You say, worrier, worrier. In fact, worry has a definite physical consequence. People get headaches, neck pains, ulcers, even back pains. You could throw cancer in there as well. Worry affects our thinking. It affects our digestion and even our coordination. Think about that for a moment. The antidote to worry is the secure mind. The peace of God that Paul talks about in our next verse, verse 7, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Is there anybody here that doesn't want that peace of God? We all want it. We all need it. And when you have the secure mind, the peace of God guards you, and the God of peace will guide you. He guides the direction we're going to go in. You can choose to worry and just fall apart if you want, or else you can just get up. Years ago, when I was going through a tremendous time in my life, I was in a state of, didn't even know I was depressed, in a state of depression, but one of my friends came up and said, hey, I'm near your home. I'm going to pick you up. And I hadn't been out of the house in like 3 or 4 days. I'm going to pick you up. I hadn't even showered. I'm going to pick you up. You're going to go with me up to the mountains. I'm like, no, I don't feel like going. His response was, I didn't ask you. Well, he was a bomb tech, so I knew. Oh, I better listen to this guy. So I jumped in the shower real quick, went up to the mountains, and what I did, it was during that time of year, like now, when I tell you in Fresno, where it's gloomy, overcast, just foggy. He had to go inspect the bomb site up in the mountains, so we went up above where the clouds were, and I saw the sunshine. And I went in, and we had a hamburger together, and he just took me out of my circumstance. I got to see something different. And what happened was my circumstance was right here. And what he came is he moved that out of the way so that I could see the sun, the S-O-N. I could see Jesus. And don't you know, it was that trip that helped guide me to think differently. I realized this isn't all going to stay this way. It's going to change. But the peace of God not only guards you, but it guides you. And with that kind of protection, why worry? Why do we worry? If we truly understand and truly know that. On your sheet as well, I wrote three things that Warren Wiersbe wrote on there. One of them is, what are three things you're worried about right now? If you begin to rejoice about other more positive things, how do you think your worries would be affected? Number two, do you think it's really possible to rejoice always? Then it says explain. I'm going to have you answer that for me next week. How might you reduce your amount of worry or worrying in the future? How do we do that? Rick Warren writes, I don't ascribe to everything Rick Warren says, but this was pretty right on the money. He says, worry is the warning light that God is not really first in my life at this particular moment, because worry says that God is not big enough to handle my troubles.
Wrong.
So what do? We worry, say. But God, what if? The answer to that was, what if he does? What if he doesn't? What if he does? You can play that game all year. Jill Briscoe writes, we can worry or we can worship. It's like the weary Christian who was awake all night trying to hold the world together by his worrying. And then he heard the Lord gently say to him, you go to sleep now, Jim. I'll sit up. I'll sit up and worry for you. You go to sleep, though. By the way, it is said medically that people who worry often have a hard time with sleep.
Yeah.
They're sleep deprived. And when you're sleep deprived, there's no way for your body to heal. Sleep was designed by God for the body to recuperate and to recover from that day. That's why he tells us to rest. The Sabbath day is a day of rest. We need to rest. I like this little saying. Said the robin to the sparrow, I would really like to know why these anxious human beings rush about and hurry so. Said the sparrow to the robin, I think it must be that they have no heavenly father such as cares for you and me. I think about that when Linda feeds her birds. I'm like, those birds, they don't care where it comes from. It's just there. They don't care that Al and Linda had to pay for it. They just come and eat, you know, and they're a joy just to watch them. But I think God plainly did that for us to say, if you feed them, they're going to come. You'll get to see the beauty. But you notice how they don't work or toil for it? Not only that, they don't even worry. They don't sit around and go, where are we going to eat now? We know what they say. Let's go to the Abdullahs. Paul says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication. Or some of your versions say petition. With thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. There was one gentleman who, this just comes to mind, it's not in my notes, but I remember reading, he said, one guy asked him, who was a nobleman, and he asked him, he says, do you ever worry about, since you have no home, do you ever worry about being out in the streets? No, not at all, because I have a home. It's in heaven. I don't worry about it. Well, do you ever worry about not eating? No, I always give thanks, because God, if God gives me food, I'm thankful. And if there's no food, I'm thankful. Because I know he's there. He just kept turning that around over and over. I'm thankful for what God has given me. It says, and the peace of God, verse 7, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds through Christ Jesus. Listen to the way the Living Bible puts it. Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God your needs, and don't forget to thank him for his answers. If you do this, you will experience God's peace, which is far more wonderful than the human mind can understand.
That's beautiful.
So we get a full understanding of why Paul is saying this. Why might the saints at Philippi have been prone to anxiety? Well, remember in chapter 1, Paul encouraged them to in no way be alarmed by their opponents. We read through that, reminding them that to them it had actually been granted for Christ's sake, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for his sake. There's some times we're going to suffer for the sake of Christ. People don't like that. Well, but if he suffered, why can't we suffer for his namesake? See, because what happens, that's where you start hearing the questions, and they're ridiculous questions. Why would God allow so much water to hit the ground? Well, did God promise that he would never flood the earth again and kill everybody?
Yeah, he did.
He kept his promise, didn't he?
Yeah.
And I was telling Linda this the other day. They said that over 40 trillion gallons of water has hit that area. And I just, me, and by the way, my mind thinks, how'd they measure that?
Yeah.
You know, 40 trillion. Well, how come not 38 trillion? Or, you know, how do you do that? We have no concept of what that is. And if that is 40 trillion gallons, how much was it when Noah was in the ark?
Jeez.
Wow. Yeah. That's a big bunch of water.
See, for Paul, even at the time of this writing, they were experiencing the same conflict. the same strife, the same contention that he was going through. And that not only that, but that they've seen in him that he got arrested for. And Paul's not making light of their troubles, which they face, but he knows that God is greater than all their troubles. He is seeing God at work in his trouble. He knew that the joyful, remember Philippians was written about what? Joy, your joy, that your joy would be full. But he saw that the joyful saints at Philippi were habitually worrying and continually forfeiting their joy. That's what worry does. It takes your joy. See? All believers need to keep the lofty view and the character and the attributes of God. And remember that nothing is outside of his sovereign control or is too difficult for him to handle. God is sovereign. Paul knew that a low view of God would lead to spiritual instability, often with a predisposition toward anxiety and worry. It was going to lead to worry and anxiety. People who have no hope in God, all they can do is worry. And what happens? They get sick. They get debilitated. And then other people around them get affected as well. You ever been around somebody that's just, I call them the Eeyore, what is it that?
Eeyore.
That, is Winnie it, the Pooh. In Winnie the Pooh, but what was that? That troll's name in the cartoon Gulliver. They always wonder, I knew we shouldn't have came this way. Right? You're around people like that. They bring you down. You're like, I got to get away from this. Right?
Drama.
There you go. That reminds me, for a gift one time, I was counseling in California on my desk. It had a clock. And on the back of the clock, it said drama, or I had a sign that said a drama-free zone. And on the bottom of the clock, every time I counseled, you turn it upside down. There's no time for drama. On the clock. I got in trouble a few times for that, but Miranda gave it to me, so.
There you go.
See, if we look at a closer view at the verb be anxious, it indicates that it's a command. It's not a suggestion. Be anxious. Really, it's written in the reverse. Nothing be anxious for. Nothing. I think about Billy Preston's song, Nothing from Nothing Leaves Nothing. You got to have something if you want to be with me. But nothing from nothing leaves nothing, which means everything. It means don't worry about anything. And it's really amazing because if it is, and it is, a command, the only way we can keep this or the supernatural command is by learning to lean on the indwelling spirit, the supernatural power of the Holy Spirit. It's the only way. And when we don't, if you try to keep those in your own, what happens, or in your natural strength or the natural man, you experience the futility and you drift into legalism. What is that? Galatians 3:3, Paul says, are you so foolish, having begun in the spirit? Are you now being made perfect in the flesh? Galatians 3:3. See, it's only through the spirit that we are in the spirit that we cannot worry. Think about that for a moment. When the fear comes upon us, the very first thing we should do is what Paul says. He says, be anxious for nothing. Okay, here comes anxiety. But in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. Lord, I don't know why this is happening right now, but I need you. I am not going to get through this on my own. That needs to be our acknowledgement. I am not going to get through this on my own. Because if you think you can, guess what? God is so loving and kind and just, he will let us. You think you can get through that on your own now? Go ahead. I'll let you. To show you that you can't. It's only through him. So we need to pray. And Paul is saying in Galatians, are you, I love that. Are you so foolish now? Having begun in the spirit, are you now being made perfect by the flesh? Go ahead and worry. See, I believe this is the reason that many of us go down that rabbit hole of worry. Is because we tend to do it on our own. Think about that the next time you're worrying. Am I trying to do this on my own? Because the answer will be, I need to pray. I need to pray right now. One writer says, God's commandments always include his enablements, specifically the enabler. What do I mean by using a term that society often uses in a negative sense? I'm referring to the indwelling spirit who alone can enable us to obey these commands. Yes, we still have to make a volitional choice to obey, but we can only do so successively as we rely on his supernatural power, not our frail, fallen, natural power. When we got issues that are going on that are way beyond our control, you have to ask yourself, why is this beyond my control? God's in it, and he wants us to trust him. Why? Because he gets all the glory. There are a lot of people today who, you know, so to speak, pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, and it isn't God that pulled them up. And they prove to themselves that they don't need God. The word be anxious, by the way, is devised from many root words that mean to distract, to divide, to draw different directions, which is exactly what anxiety does to most of us. Watch this. It pulls us apart, okay? It pulls us apart from the Spirit, pulls us apart from God, pulls us apart from Jesus. There's only one pull apart that I like. And it has cinnamon and butter and flour, and they make it, and you pull it apart, and you have it with coffee. That should be the only pull apart we go for, not anxiety. I guess we'll look at that pull apart. Anxiety pull apart, not the kind you want. That's got garbage in it. But it expresses a strong feeling for something or someone, often to the point of being burdened. Okay? Talked about that earlier when he just said, I worry for family members. That's a burden that she's carrying for somebody. Wanting to know if they're going to be okay. I deal with my son all the time. When I think about, you know, my granddaughter's now driving in Southern California. Oh, Lord, please watch over them.
Yeah, boy.
See, one of the things this word, be anxious, in most of the New Testament, it refers to an anxious concern based on apprehension about possible danger or misfortune. And that's why Paul's using it here. And so it means to be worried about or to be anxious about, to be apprehensive. What is that? Viewing the future with anxiety or alarm. What's going to happen in November? God already knows. Yeah. Lord, I'm trusting you. Yeah. Trusting you. See what that does for today? It helps me to keep from saying the dumb things that I'm prone to say. God already knows. I'm trusting him. I don't have to worry about that. We can still look at it with apprehension, though, and say, hey, I hope it turns out okay. Hope it turns out the way we want it. One of the things that I want to point out in that is a lot of times people are burdened or they're anxious because they simply have nothing else to look to, so they worry. Yeah. The Greek places the word nothing at the beginning, as I said earlier, of the sentence for emphasis. Since the verb be anxious is written in a way, it's called a present imperative, which is a command. It's not just an exhortation or not something optional that would be nice to do if we decide to do it. It means you need to do this. Really, Paul is saying, stop worrying and do not under any circumstance worry about anything. Okay. But it's written in a way that says, you're already doing this. Stop doing that. There's a contrast to that where it says, you're doing this. Keep on doing this. Does that make sense? It's saying, do not be anxious for anything. Stop doing it. You're doing it, stop doing it, because it's not going to get you anywhere. One writer says, worry has a fascinating etymology, which can be traced back to the old High German Wurgen, which means to strangle. That's what worry does. It strangles us, right? Which is what worry does to our joy. Webster adds that in Dialect British worry means to choke or to strangle. The first definition of worry in Webster is to harass by tearing, biting, or snapping, especially at the throat. And then to subject, the persistent or nagging attention or effort. Or to subject, I should say. And to afflict with mental distress or agitation. To make anxious. That's what worry does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It makes you crazy. There's a lot of people who have mental disabilities today because they couldn't get a handle on worry. Couldn't get a handle on it. By the way, Peter offered similar advice to us. If you're taking notes in 1 Peter 5, verses 6 and 7, listen to what he says. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety upon him. Why? Because he cares for you. Now, think about that as a parent. Would we want our kids to carry unneeded burdens when we can look at them and say, there's no need for you to do that? Will we just let that happen? Of course not. We're going to intercede for them. We're going to pray for them. How can we help meet that need? Linda said it the other day. We were watching Leave It to Beaver. Today, as a matter of fact, she said about a bicycle. The boys wanted to buy a bicycle. And they told the dad, he says, well, I can't just buy the bike for you. You have to work for it. Well, we have been saving up. Oh, well, I'll help buy it. How much do you need? It was $52. Well, how much do you have saved up? $6. I'm not just going to give you the money. You need to go work. Linda's response was, you'd have just bought your son the bike.
Yeah.
And that's true. We don't want them carrying those kind of burdens. So let me ask you this question. Does God want us carrying the burdens that we're carrying?
No.
We're worrying things we're worrying about? No. He's saying, you know, you could cast your care upon me. Why? Because I care for you. Peter knew that. Think about that for a moment. I'm going to read it again. Remember who Peter was. He was a boisterous, arrogant person that told you, not like these chumps here, I will never deny you. Peter says, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety upon him because he cares for you at the proper time. As a matter of fact, Jesus gave us an even similar one in Matthew 6, 25 and 26. About don't be anxious. He says, therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life. You could stop right there, I guess, because there's a period, there's a comma. Therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life. Do you have Jesus in your life? And if he says, do not worry about your life, why do we do that? He said, what will you eat or what you will drink, nor about your body? What you will put on? Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Here it is. Look at the birds of the air. For they neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not more value than they? We are. He gets us to feed those birds. That's how much value they are. But even more so, he feeds us. And what I'm going to do is, because there's so much in here, I'm going to make this a two-parter that we can be more fully engulfed in the antidote for worry, because just this session is not going to get us to leave and not worry about things anymore. We want to know why. Paul gives us that. And I want you to follow through from verses 7 through the end of the chapter, because, and I want you to read that over and over and over, because he gives you an antidote of how we're to do that in verse 8. He uses the word finally. What's he saying? I'm going to end this letter now, and I'm going to show you what you need to do. And I love that, because he says, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. And I'll end it right there. That's what we need to meditate on. That's what we need to look at. Stop worrying. Lord, I need your help because I can't stop on my own. I'll confess that because I'll worry about that. I've been sitting there all day while I was putting this study together. How am I going to get that roof done? Lord, you're going to have to help me. I don't know how. But physically, let me get it done. I'm that close to it. Don't let me falter, God. And so on your sheet, I want you to take those things and I want you to have your own little journal. Because it's going to come up. There's something that's going to hit you and it's going to cause you to worry. Stop. Take out your paper and say, what am I worrying about? And what is it that I'm worrying about? It could be, you know, whatever. I'll just make something up, you know. Tree hit the house, you know. Of course, we're not going to sit there and go, oh, well, okay, sarah, sarah. We're going to go, okay, this is terrible. How am I going to deal with this? But write it down because it's going to come. You know how I know? Remember I told you that the enemy is always amongst us even when we have a study?
Yeah.
He's gonna come to home and see if you actually learned anything. But the thing I want you to focus on is the end of verse 5. The Lord is at hand. In our circumstance, the Lord is at hand. Whatever befalls us, the Lord is at hand. Okay? And you write that thing for the next 33 days, and guess what's gonna happen? It's not gonna matter. As a matter of fact, what a great opportunity. I was thinking about that song that we finished with. It's gonna help us to close out the study. So, Lord, I want to thank you for Paul in his great wisdom, Lord, of giving us this chapter, Lord, in verse, this letter.